The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter Number 3, Text Number 9, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on January 23, 2011, in Los Angeles, California, USA.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter Number 3, Yamaraj Instructs His Messengers, Text Number 9. Repeat after me to invoke auspiciousness. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Niyamanam Tava Adeshat Asmabhi Yatana Grihan Vyamochayan Patakinam Chitva Pasham Prasahya Te Niyamanang Tavadeshad Asmabir Yatanagriham Vyamochayan Patakinam Chitva Pasham Prasahya Te Niyamanam tavadeshad Asmabir yatanagriham Vyamochayan patakinam Chitvapashan prasahyate Niyamanam being brought Tava adeshat by your order, asmabhi, by us, yatanagriham, to the torture chambers, the hellish planets, vyamochayan, released, patakinam, the sinful ajamil, Chitva cutting Pasham the ropes Pasahya by force Te they. Translation in purport. By His Divine Grace, they see Bhaktivedanta Tridhandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. We were bringing the most sinful ajamil toward the hellish planets, following your order. When these beautiful persons from Siddha Loka forcibly cut the knots of the ropes of which we were arresting him. Purapuram. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that the Yamadutas wanted to bring the Vishnu Dutas before Yamaraj. If Yamaraj could then have punished the Vishnu Dutas, the Yamadutas would have been satisfied. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Barakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tamsajiva. Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. So, what's going on here? The greatly sinful Ajamnya is a young boy. He was a pious Brahmin, priestly class. But due to seeing a sexually engaged Shudra couple in the forest, his mind became very, very agitated. And he gave up his priestly life and became decadent, very, very decadent person. So now he became an old, old man, a whole life of debauchery. And he had one son. Many children he had, but his youngest son, he named Narayan. Now Narayan, that is the name of God in Sanskrit language. In India, it is a very common practice to name the children after God. And in our Krishna consciousness movement also, we are named after God. Each one of us, when we take our initiation vows, is given a name after God or after God's, one of the servants of God. Just like Srila Prabhupada gave me the name Sankarshan Das. So Sankarshan is the name of the Lord in Sanskrit language. So Prabhupada told us that even if one can remember his own name at the time of death, he will go back to the spiritual world. So it is a great blessing, these spiritual names. So in India, it is a very good custom. They will name the children after God. So because he was very saintly in his early days, he thought, even though he was now debauchee number one, he thought, let me name my son Narayan. So the youngest child, always that is the most affection for the youngest, you see. So anyway, now he's dying, an old, old man, a whole life of debauchery. And so what is his fate at the time of death? Well, we read the word torture chamber here. That's not allegorical, that's factual. There's actually hellish planets. It's not simply something written in the scriptures to scare us into being pious. It's actually fact. It's there in the Bible, it's there in the Vedas. It's real, it's factual. There's actual hellish places in this world and in the nether world where one is dragged at the time of death if one is a sinful person. So the god of that place, he is known as Yamaraj, the god of death. And he has his dutas or messengers called Yama dutas, messengers of death. So now, as he is leaving the body, the Yama dutas are coming to grab him with subtle ropes to grab his soul and the subtle body which encases the soul and rip him out of that body and take him to the hellish regions for torture. For all of his wonderful, I'm being sarcastic here, his sinful activities. But when he saw these horrible creatures, it was the most terrifying experience to see these horrible monsters coming to rip you out of your body. It was very heavy. But he was very frightened, so he called for his son, Narayan, Narayan. He wanted to be saved by his son. Of course, what the little baby boy can do, save the father from the Yamadutas. But because it is the name of Narayan, it was the name of God. As soon as he uttered the name of Narayan, just as Yamaraj, the god of death, has his agents, the Supreme Lord also has his agents. Sometimes in the Bible we call angels, you see. They are called in Vedas Vishnu Dutas, the messengers of the Supreme Lord. So as soon as they heard him utter Narayan, they came rushing to the scene and they stopped these monstrous characters, the Yamadutas, from taking him to the hellish region. So there's a lot of benefits with chanting the name of God. If you can practice chanting the name of God throughout your life, and be written, you know, and be at a moment's notice. It's like in American history, we have the Minutemen. You see. Within 1 minute, they were prepared to. They jumped out of their beds to fight off the Britishers. So a minute isn't enough. We need to be the nanosecond men, that we can immediately utter the name of God when there is danger. Not even waiting. We're not going to wait 60 seconds. If within 1 nanosecond, we can immediately utter the name of God, Narayan or Krishna, you see. Heavenly Father, different names in different scriptures. Any name is good. You can call a name from the Bible, the Quran, the Vedas. The principle is the same. Here in this Krishna consciousness movement, we are teaching the science of God. We are not presenting Indian religion or Hindu religion or some kind of sect. No. We are presenting the science of God, you see. The theological science is a universal principle. It can be applied within the context of Christianity, within the context of Islam, the context of Judaism, the context of Hinduism, etc. But the science is a universal principle. And this is what we are teaching here, as we have learned from our beloved spiritual master, our founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta T. Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. Even though this is a murti or a statue of Srila Prabhupada, actually Prabhupada, by His divine potency, is actually present with us in this form, seated here on the Vyasa San, and He's also present here in these teachings. So even though He departed in 1977 from this world, we still feel how He is very much present with us, and He is guiding us and blessing us in our sincere endeavor to please Him and serve His mission. So He is very elaborately explained in His Bhaktivedanta Purports, which is His commentaries on the Vedic wisdom, in many, many volumes of books. The highest level theological science of how one can understand one's true identity as a spiritual being and not the material body. You see, the basic defect of the modern civilization is we are caught up in bodily consciousness. I'm thinking I'm a male, you're thinking you're female, I'm thinking American, Indian, Russian. These are bodily designations. And the difficulty with the bodily designations is that what is the fate of the body? The fate of the body is old age, disease, and death. So as long as one continues to think of himself or herself in relationship with the body, you're trapped. You're in a very depressing situation where you're being destroyed by time. Every minute, the clock is ticking away. It's like the NASA countdowns, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, blast off. So we have a countdown. Each one of us is having a death countdown right now. We don't know when we're going to hit zero, but we're all counting down. At every second, time is robbing our life away from us. So it's not actually a very exciting, exhilarating position to identify with this mortal coil, this flesh and blood. It's not very enlivening. All the great teachers in history, Lord Jesus Christ, Hazrat Muhammad, Lord Buddha, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna, all these great teachers, personalities of Godhead and representatives of the personality of Godhead, all of these great teachers throughout history have come to remind us, you're not that body. You're the eternal spiritual being. You're qualitatively one with God. God is eternal, you are eternal. God is full of bliss, you are full of bliss. God is full of knowledge, you are full of knowledge. So the most important thing we can actually do in this human life is to become self-realized. This is enjoined in the Vedanta Sutra. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now you've got a human form. You must utilize it to inquire, who am I? What is my relationship with God? What is the Supreme? What is the Absolute? These are the questions we are meant to ask in this human form. If we don't do that, well, the bad news is it's animal life. The Vedas say two-legged animal, dvipada pashu, and when you get old, tripada pashu, right? Cain becomes the third leg, you see. So we are not meant to live an animalistic life simply gratifying our material senses. We don't say, don't gratify your senses, but gratify them insofar as is required for a healthy life. That's it. But beyond that, it's suicide. It's poison. If I give you a cup of poison right now, so here, it's a nice cup of arsenic for breakfast. Would you say, wow, a cup of arsenic, great. Let me drink that cup of arsenic. No. But we are, by embracing the principle of material sense gratification, we are drinking a poison much worse than arsenic. Because not only are you being killed in this lifetime, but the laws of nature will kill you again and again and again, birth after birth after birth after birth. You see? So an intelligent person thinks, well, there's got to be something better than this. I mean, there really has to be. I mean, God couldn't be so cruel to put me in a situation where there's simply, I'm forced to be extinguished. It's like living, who would like to live on death row? I have a nice apartment for you on death row. Who would like to come? We've got air conditioned. There's a television set. It's a swimming pool. It's on death row. Who would like to volunteer to move into death row right now? You see, nobody would like to live on death row, but we're all living on death row right now. We don't realize it. We're all living on death row. As long as we continue to identify with this material body. So the first step in self-realization is you got to kick out this false conception that I'm the body. The very first step. This is kindergarten. Spiritual kindergarten. I'm not the body. You see. That's where it all begins. And someone who has not realized I'm not the body, you're thinking, hey, I'm an American, I'm a guy, I'm a girl, I'm this, I'm that. They're not even kindergartners yet, spiritually speaking. You see. The first step that we have to teach is I'm not the body. You see. It's the universal principle. These principles, just like our These principles we're teaching are universal principles. Just like there's one Baptist minister who studies these books and he incorporates them into his sermons with his Baptist congregation. He gives them this knowledge in Christian terms. So this is a universal principle here. I'm not the material body. And I'm a spiritual being. The Vedas describe actually it's 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. It's a little teeny weeny particle. In geometric terms, it's a point. It has no physical dimensions, but it's a location. There is that teeny weeny particle is seated within the heart of the body. That particle, that spiritual self, which is right now in the form of a little particle, is what energizes the heart to energize the body. And death means when that particle then leaves. You see? When that spirit soul passes out of the body, that is death. So, what is the nature of that particle, that spiritual self? This is the most important knowledge that one can learn in one's life. Who am I? What is my nature? And how can I perfect that nature? I'm not the body? Okay, now I know what I'm not. Now who am I? I'm a spirit soul. I'm qualitatively one with the Lord. And I'm meant to serve the Lord. Why? Why am I meant to serve the Lord? It is a natural thing. If you're a part of something larger than yourself, then your natural function is to serve it. It's like in any automobile, for example, there's various parts of the automobile. Each part of that automobile is meant to serve the complete function of the automobile. That is the position of each part of the automobile. If the part is not serving, it means it's a broken part. It has to be replaced and repaired. So we can understand that each one of us can understand we are part of something much greater than ourselves. We are part of a complete whole. Can any one of us claim to be the complete whole? That I am the complete whole? Can you claim to be that I am the complete whole? Can any of you claim to be the complete whole? No. Each one of us is a tiny part of a complete whole. And that complete whole is God. So we are meant to serve that complete whole. That is by very nature. And if we're not serving it, we're like a broken part on the car that needs to be repaired. You see, a monkey wrench in the gears. So right now we have an entire society which is a monkey wrench in the gear society, and that's why the whole ecological, economical, sociological, every kind of logical situation that we have right now on this planet is going haywire. Because we're not in touch with the Supreme. Isn't it? I mean, it's really haywire. So, we got to reharmonize ourselves. We got to get back in sync with the Supreme. Each one of us is individual consciousness. I'm conscious of the pains and pleasures of my body. You are conscious of the pains and pleasures of your body. But there's a Supreme Consciousness who is conscious of absolutely everything. That is God. So the individual consciousness, he has to become resynchronized with that Supreme Consciousness. When he does so, that state is known as Krishna consciousness, or Christ consciousness, or universal consciousness, or Buddha consciousness, or Allah consciousness, you see. That is the science of self-realization. And this should be understood. Any theological student who wants to become advanced in theological understanding would do very well to scrutinizingly study Prabhupada's books, you see, very carefully study. Our mission is not to convert. Our mission is to educate. We're not asking Jesuits to become Hare Krishnas. We're asking that everyone should simply, especially those who are taking the role of spiritual leaders, should become highly learned in the theological science. Because by that learning, then, we can actually turn the tide of the times right now back towards a peaceful, natural, harmonious condition on this planet. You see? Right? What is the real cause of all this air pollution, water pollution, sociological pollution like terrorism, war, crime? That's also pollution. Why is it happening? Because our minds are polluted. Our minds are not fixed in love of God, you see. Therefore, that mental or subtle contamination then manifests on the gross plane in the form of air pollution, water pollution, terrorism, crime, and war, etc., economic problems, etc. So the real key to solve all the problems of this planet is a very simple solution. We really have a turnkey solution here for the leaders of this planet. We hope the leaders will take heed before it's too late, before the whole society just collapses, the global society. Because we're heading right now towards collapse, as predicted by the poet Yeats. He said, "Things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world." We're heading in that direction, that's a fact. We are heading in that direction. Global warming, just imagine, I was just in Lima the other day, and I thought the water comes from the mountains out there, some snow melting way out there in the mountains. But the whole city can be destroyed by global warming, you see. What to speak of place like Los Angeles. You see, there's so many things we're facing now. The whole society can completely collapse. And the root cause of all these difficulties are we're not in contact with the Supreme. We've lost our connection with the Supreme. Instead of connecting with the Supreme, we're thinking, I'm the Supreme. I'm the center of the universe. I'm the center of enjoyment. That's our consciousness we develop. We've been trained that way. By our leaders, by our poets, by our songwriters, by our even the theologians now are getting off the track. So we really have to get back to the pure position, just like Christ taught in the Bible. He said, Father, not my will, but thy will be done. It's so beautiful and so wonderful how Jesus explained in one nutshell the perfection of consciousness. Father, not my will, but thy will be done. In other words, if I'm thinking, well, my will, you see, I'm being selfish. I have to think, what does God want me to do? Not what do I want to do, you see. My desire is not killed. My desire is dovetailed with the desire of the Lord, you see. That's called Krishna consciousness. My desire is to do whatever God wants me to do. That's my desire. I want to please the Lord with my every thought, word, and deed, in all times, places, and circumstances. Let me simply become a completely sold-out servant of the Supreme. That's how the consciousness becomes purified of all selfishness. That's how we come back to the platform of selfless love of the Supreme. So it's very important we understand the nature of God. Many now say that God is an impersonal, formless oneness, or impersonal, formless light, or impersonal, formless void. But that doesn't stand up to logical analysis, and it doesn't stand up to scriptural study as well. The scriptures don't say that. The Vedas don't say that. The Bible doesn't say that. The Quran doesn't say that. Nor does logic uphold that conception of an impersonal oneness. That source of all existence from which we are all coming must possess personality. Otherwise, how does personality can come from it? Can you get gold from a goldless gold mine? Have you ever extracted gold from a goldless gold mine? No, not possible. If you want gold out of that mine, there must be gold in the mine. So if we're getting personalities out of the original source of existence, that original source of existence must indeed possess personality. So that means the original source of everything, by simple logic we can understand, that original source of everything is a person. And why that person is emanating everything from himself? Why has he done this? Is he obliged to do it? That he has some quota that somebody gave him? No. Simply for his own enjoyment. That Supreme Person, for his own enjoyment, has expanded all of us from himself. For what purpose? To torture it? No. To enjoy loving relationships with us. Just like why do parents have children? To... Chanakya Pandit said, a house without children, it's a desert. So the Supreme Lord must be a follower of Chanakya, because I'm saying that, of course, Chanakya is actually a follower of him. But the point is that this Chanak conception is there in God also. That to expand his own enjoyment, he is emanating from himself a countless number of living entities to enjoy loving relationships. In Sanskrit it is called rasa, loving relationship. Rasa is also translated as taste. It's very interesting the way that word rasa is translated, as relationship and as taste. You may say, well, how can it mean both relationship and taste? Well, you have to understand that there's no taste without relationship. And if there's taste, there must be relationship. So for the sake of rasa, or taste, or relationship, that original Supreme Person has manifested all of us from himself. So that's why you exist, my dear friends. Not because your parents wanted to have a baby. That only explains your body. But your body is not you, it's just the covering. The actual self, the Atma, as we say in Sanskrit, the actual self exists because God wants to have a loving relationship with you. So, it makes sense then to understand that if I'm created, or I am emanated, eternally emanated from that Supreme Person for the purpose of having a loving relationship with Him, if I don't do that, then something is messed up. Something's out of sync. And that's the position we're in right now in the material world. That's why the Lord himself comes. That's why he sends great teachers here to this world to bring us back to our original position of loving relationship with the Supreme. So I really don't have enough time to go very much deeper. There's so much more I could say, but I have a note up here. 8:10. I'm supposed to stop at 8:10. I'm already 10 minutes over time. I may not be invited back to speak here if I violate, if I go too far over time. They may yank me off the asana here. But I really appreciate that you all have come today to hear about this transcendental knowledge. Kindly try to understand it. It's not something sectarian. It's not a different type of religion. Religion is the universal science of relinking. The word religion comes from the Latin religio, which means to reconnect. So religion is a universal science of relinking with the Supreme, whatever name you may use from the Bible or the Quran or the Vedas, it doesn't matter. But the principle is to relink with that Supreme Person through love. So now I can ask if there's any questions. Oh, questions during breakfast.
Yes.
All right. There'll be a more informal setting where you can maybe embarrassed to ask a question in front of a huge audience, but you know, a more informal one-on-one type of setting, one can ask questions. Anyone else have a question who's not afraid to ask in front of everyone? All right. How to start off bhakti?
Yeah.
The first thing is to read these books. Because it's not just a sentiment. It's actually a science. The thing is to have a strong... We really recommend to study these books, especially Bhagavad Gita as it is. We have it in our gift shop here. We encourage everyone, get Bhagavad Gita as it is and study it thoroughly cover to cover, because once you have a solid philosophical understanding of who am I, who is God, what is my relationship with God, why am I having misery and suffering in my life right now, why do I suffer an identity crisis sometimes now, all these things become very clear when you study the Gita, and then when you go forward in your practice, you really know why you're doing it. It's not just some, you know, like being a cult member or something like that. You actually understand the science. I'm just like in the laboratory, H2O equals water. You understand the science behind it, that if I combine two parts hydrogen with one part oxygen, I'm going to get water. You know the science, and then you go to the laboratory, and it gives meaning to taking those two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen. So once you know the science of actually what's happening, what you can expect, at the end you can actually expect to be able to see God directly, face to face. You actually become completely purified. The whole coverings, all the curtain of material energy, for one who becomes pure in love of God, the curtain of the material energy comes back and you can see God face to face at every minute. So once you understand the science and you actually, then it becomes very exciting. Even in the beginning, let's face it, it's a long road. We've been covered by, for millions of lifetimes, of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. So it's that you need that vision that you'll get by carefully studying the books. And once you've done that, then I'll just check the local devotees here. We'll be glad to get you set up with the techniques. You know, how to do the meditation, how to offer the food, all those things that we do. But the most important thing is read these books, understand these books thoroughly, and then everything will make sense. And then you'll be very exciting because you'll know what you're going to get at the end of the pathway. You're going to get pure love of God. You'll be able to become an intimate personal associate of the Supreme Lord Himself. Okay, any other questions? Okay, well, we thank you all very much, especially to our Jesuit guests. We especially thank you, and all the other devotees too. We thank you very much for coming today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.